It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How you doing? Thanks for tuning in to Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest station in the Western Hemisphere. You know what? I'm just going to report in that I'm really depressed. I've been having really anxiety and depression. Last week, I remember saying that I was in a really good mood. Well, that went away. And I think maybe it's because, I've actually had a couple of friends I've dealt with illness and friends that all kind of clotted together. I don't know if that's a good word. And then I think it's daylight savings time. I'm going to blame it partly on that, okay? Because nothing's really wrong in my life. I mean, besides the usual shit happens stuff. So anyway, if you're with me and if you're struggling, don't take it personally. It could be daylight savings time. So I'm really excited. I'm so thrilled that Christian Finnegan, this amazing comic that I just adore, agreed to come all the way here from Queens a second time. I mean, he is my personal hero. And we're going to hear from him in a second. I want to make sure that you know about Radio Free Brooklyn, radiofreebrooklyn.org. We're a community-based radio station. We have all sorts of shows, not just talk shows. We have so many music shows, and we do so much good stuff. You know, we're really it's a really good, positive force, and I want you to know about us. So check us out on radiofreebrooklyn.org and donate money, because you have to donate all your money by the end of the year or you're going to get that big tax bill. Okay, just quickly, I'm going to try and get through this quickly because I want to really spend the time with Christian. But one of the reasons, one of the many reasons Christian is here today is because Christian and I are trying to, are not just trying, we are wholeheartedly promoting the Waggy Tail benefit at Chelsea Music Hall tonight. It's tonight. And it's going to be, first of all, it's a great dog rescue run by Holly Dorito. She has spent her whole life rescuing dogs. She has rescued hundreds, maybe thousands of dogs. And it's just a really great volunteer organization. And the way they keep going is through benefits, and mostly comedy benefits, because Holly loves comedy, she got Christian to perform tonight. She also got Seth Herzog and Janine Garofalo to perform, and there's going to be other really great performers. So what you want to do is look up Waggy Tail Rescue and come. It's at 8:30. Okay, so you're gonna. All right, I actually donated a painting because I make paintings, and the painting that I donated is a text painting that says I'm really stoned right now. So it kind of works. You know, whether you're, anyway, you want people to know who they're dealing with. So let me just tell you a little bit about Christian. There's really too much to say about Christian because I could probably go on, but here's the highlights. Chappelle Show, okay, best week ever. Today's Show, Conan, Broad City.
I've never been on Broad.
You've never been on, well, it said it here. Here, it said in, really?
The liars.
Really? Okay. Well, they said that. Somebody said that. Okay. But no, he's been on, every form of TV. He's been on a lot of TV. The last time he was here, we were having a really interesting discussion about his latest special. He has four specials or whatever. I don't
Something
know.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, he's the real deal, folks. Okay. But we were talking about his last special, which I absolutely loved, called Show Your Work. And it's incredibly innovative. We had You should look that up on my archives for the discussion, but you should really look at, watch it, because it's completely original. It came out during the pandemic. The reason I was so fascinated, one of the reasons, is that it came out during the pandemic, and there was this real honesty. It was hilarious, but it also had this real honesty and vulnerability that I really didn't see in any other comedy. You know, there was a ton of comedy specials. What the fuck was everybody doing? They couldn't tour. And his really stood out to me as, you know, a real creative commitment in the best way that, you know, you guys, I can't endorse it enough. Did I tell you? So, okay, so I told you about that. I told you, Christian. So here's how to, you know, just keep track of Christian. If you go to Instagram or he's big on Twitter. He's huge, like over 50,000. You know,
it's the only one I do, really.
No, it's huge. It's huge. You retweeted my tweet, and then I got more tweets than more whatever. I've never gotten such a big response.
Just
from
wait till those Twitter dollars start rolling in.
money, getting money in any way does never occur to me in any way, unless I'm cleaning somebody's apartment or something. No, not really. So anyway, it's Christ Finnegan, FINNEGAN. That's his Twitter handle. And then it's ChristianFinnegan.com. But what we really want to talk about is his latest project, New Music for Olds at Substack.com. And Christian is doing a service, I'd say, by curating new music for people who, it's so complicated to be tuned into music. Now, tell us about what you're doing. Tell us about that project in particular.
Sure. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and thank you for the many kind words, which I will do my best to not try to undercut with self-deprecation. I will just say thank you.
That's part of it. That's part of what I love about you is the self-deprecation. Don't worry about it.
Hey, somebody's got to deprecate me. Trust me, if I had anybody else to deprecate me, I wouldn't have to do it myself. But this thing is called New Music for Olds. It's you can find it at newmusicforolds.substack.com. And it's just a newsletter I started about 6 months ago. You know, I think like a lot of us, you know, you start to deal with kind of some, just feeling down in the dumps and what am I doing with the rest of my life? What am I going to be when I grow up? And I tried to think like, what are the things that I just do because I want to do them. Nobody's asking me for them. I just do them to entertain myself. And once I ruled out the unhealthy things, I was left with that I'm, you know, I'm 49, I'll be 50 in a few months, and I still listen to new music a lot. Like, I still go to new release sections and just click play on a lot of things. It's just what I do to entertain myself. And a lot of my friends, people who are my peers, say 10 years younger, 10 years older, or whatever, they were music heads in their 20s, but life intercedes. You know, they have kids, they have jobs, they have careers. And so I thought, well, one of my favorite things in the world to do is, you know, I have a couple friends who we text each other stuff like, hey, have you heard this? And so I just thought that if I'm going to be looking and finding new music for myself anyway, maybe I can just share some of that with people. And also just it gives me an excuse to write, you know, music related comedy of various types. And so, it's just a biweekly thing. It's just three songs every other week. And then also some music related, what I call some bullshit, just some, you know, either a joke, you know, a little sort of straight up comedy or maybe a story. Like I wrote a long story or a long piece on my newsletter over the course of three installments where I wrote about when I was a contestant on a VH1 game show called Name That Video back in 2001. And I won a car on a game show. For being obsessed with MTV when I was a kid. What? But you know, and so it's a fun thing. And it's like, I, a lot of the people who have been reading it have, I think it's kind of sparked their enjoyment of finding new music again, which is really the whole point of it, because I'm not an expert. I don't pretend that I know. I'm not Robert Christgau. I'm not, you know, I'm not Greer Marcus. Like, I'm not one of these historical rock experts. I'm just a dude who likes music, and I like sharing it with people. And so, so yeah, that's something I've been doing. And it's just, it's really, a labor of love in the sense that, you know, it's the closest you can get to just complete control. Like no one's asking me for it. Nobody needs it. I don't have to answer anybody. Like, it's just something I do for fun. And it's been hard to not let it become the complete focus of my life. If financially I could make it the focus of my life, I would.
Wow. So,
it's free, by the way, but then there's also a paid membership. Like, if you're a paid member, you get it every week. And if you're unpaid, you get it every other week.
Wow. I mean, that's like a free class in like what's going on in music. I mean, you're doing what I
try to, like, I do not care what is like popular on the charts. I'm not saying I dislike it either. It does not factor into my thinking whatsoever, whether something is super popular or nobody knows about it. Like, I don't care. I'm not really interested in the what I would call the narrative of what's going on in music. Like, who's up, who's down, who's cool, what's Taylor Swift think about this, and nothing against Taylor Swift. I actually like Taylor Swift, kind of. But it's more to me just about like that when you have a new song that you love, it just makes your day better. Like, even if it only lasts a week, but just to have a new favorite song, like not of all time, but just like a song that you're obsessed with that you listen to 50 times over the course of a week, like that just, it gives your life sort of a new car smell. And one of the nice things about the musical, about the landscape we live in now, there's so many shitty things about streaming and all that. But one of the nice things is it's just an endless buffet. You can just find stuff, whatever you want. If you're just willing to click around and just experiment and, you know, hey, what does Italian rap sound like? You know, you can just find out, you know, and so that's sort of been the spirit.
Yeah, which I think is a great service, because I've had this conversation several times with different people, and it's always like, how do you find music? Because it's so complicated. Like in my day, when I, you know, there were three bands and, you know, shit like that. And now it's just endless. And I know your taste is sort of in least minimally in the same bucket as mine, in that, like, if you only want to hear Rihanna and Beyonce, that's not what's going on. There's a lot more than that. And that's what we wind up thinking new music. That's the only new music exposed to.
Yeah. And the way the algorithm works is it will just learn what you already like and just refeed that to you over and over and over again until you die. You know, and that's why a lot of people, they end up just listening to the same, you know, like, you know, I listen to an old Alice in Chains album that I used to like, and now all I hear are those same five 90s grunge albums that I listened to when I was in high school or college. You know, but that's the bad part of the streaming economy. But the good part is that if you're willing to just literally just, hey, that's some weird album cover, I'll click play on that, see what that is. You know, it really isn't, for me, an endless source of enjoyment. You know, I'd never heard of this band before an hour ago, and now I love this and want it in my life for the next 7 to 10 days.
It's an important thing. Like, I wind up getting like bummed when I wind up listening to like the music that, you know, I'm familiar with, because I feel like stuck in the past and I'm not that person anymore. And I want to be a brand new person every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to grow. And it really, growth in that. And I'm just like, I just feel out of it, frankly. I feel really out of it. And so Christian is doing the service so you can act like you really know shit without having to do all the work, without really being like hip about music like he actually is. So I thank you, Christian.
not
and
him
that's
at all.
New music for olds
dot substack.com.
Okay. There you go.
I mean, honestly, if you just Google new music for olds, you'll find it.
Okay. Okay. We're going to do that. So here's why I have Christian on today. And I told him I wanted him back, because let's lean into this. Let's see if we can make this. I'll make it awkward. I'll lean
make
into
it. Awkward,
it. Let's
baby.
Make it awkward. Do you think this is awkward? Not Rhett. No. Not enough. Not yet. Not with you. But anyway. So here's the thing. Christian has three brothers.
Two.
I have two brothers. And I think I get this feeling, or he hinted at, that there was a very complex situation growing up, which at the last at our last session here at Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, we didn't get a chance to talk about any of that. And you know how I love that kind of shit. And we didn't get a chance to talk about it because we were so focused on his special, Do Your Work, Show Your Work. And so now's our chance. Now's my, but so now we're going to talk about that. But so here's what it's, I forget, you know, you have so many bios. I've got three pages, guys.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't
I got
know what
three
bios
pages
that I had
of at, notes
on Broad City, but I mean, I would have loved to have been. They never called.
Yeah. I'm so, I could totally picture that. You should, you know, a lot of people.
They should resurrect that show just to have me back on it.
I think
that's
so. Maybe we should Photoshop this. You into like yes. some of the promos. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to do that when I get home. But anyway, so here, just to give Christian a chance to like, you know, get a warm up for Christian. Here's what it says on one of his bios. Christian Finnegan, blah, 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 writer, actor, dancer, no, singer, singer, comedian. New York City. In high school, he attended Walnut Hill, a boarding school focused program in the performing, visual, and creative arts located in Natick, Massachusetts. He's also a graduate of NYU, where he studied acting, playwriting, began his stand-up career in 1995. So, obviously...
I only went to that school for 2 years, just my junior and senior year. I went to public school my freshman, sophomore year, and then I went to Walnut Hill mm-hmm. my junior and senior.
So, but anyway, what we did get out of that is you're from Massachusetts.
Yes, I am.
For sure.
I am from Massachusetts.
And so let's...
As much as I try to deny it within myself.
So let's talk about your childhood. So let's talk about it. So where are you in... There's three boys, no girls?
No, just three.
And so where are you in the birth order?
I was the middle. Uh-huh. Although my older brother was 2 years... older, and my younger brother was 8 years younger.
Ah,
so it was just the two of us for like the early part, and then my younger brother was born later
until
on.
Until you were eight,
yeah.
When I was brother eight, my younger and brother ten. Yeah. Oh, so that must have been weird.
Yeah, it was. You know, not to. I don't. My dad is not listening to this, but
no,
like,
your dad probably never heard. No, your dad. But don't let me. You know.
No, I'm saying no. In many ways, I feel like nothing. With no disrespect to my younger brother, it was kind of the worst thing to have happened because they probably should have split up a long time before they did. But then this kid came along, you know, and like my dad can. My dad used to be able to tell me the date that my younger brother was conceived. You know, like that's how kind of over that relationship, or, you know, at least in, wow. in terms of intimacy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then my younger brother was born, and he was born with what they call a transposition of the major arteries, which is basically the tubes that are going into your heart are going out, and the ones that are supposed to be going out are going in. And so he had like open heart surgery when he was about 2 days old.
Oh.
And then another one when he was about 3 years old.
Wow.
And then another one later. And then he had a heart transplant when he was eight. and then passed away when he was 19.
Oh.
And
that's devastating.
And so, you know, it kind of like when my younger brother was born, like it quickly became about like the family with the sick kid, you know, which is... The reality, I think anybody who's listening who has either is or had a sibling who dealt with major health issues, quite naturally, a lot of the focus becomes about that kid, positive and negative. You know, but that's sort of what happens, you know, because he probably spent half of his life in a hospital in one way, shape or form.
God, that's that's certainly tragic. That's a tragedy.
It's a tragedy. I mean, it is what it is. You know, at a certain point, you know, it was just life. I mean, he had been, you know, we had been told that he wasn't going to live until 2 years old, then he wasn't going to live until 5 years old, and he wasn't going to live until 10 years old. And then, you know, once he hit like 12 or 13, we kind of like in a 5 or 6 years after he'd had his transplant, I think we all kind of like, unclenched a little bit about it and thought that maybe everything was going to be fine, you know, just because so many times they've been given mm-hmm. these predictions that didn't end up being true.
Right.
And, but then when he was about 17 and a half, 18, he started to get sick again. I mean, basically, you know, a lot of heart transplants, like at least back then, this was back in 2001. The science is still being written, you know, in term, you know, or at least at that point, in terms of what the life expectancy is of somebody with a heart transplant. And, you know, I'm sure that if they were to tell me now, they would be able to tell me in more idiosyncratic terms. But basically they said like the heart just, it ran its course, you know?
Right.
And also my younger brother having, you know, going through rebellious teenage years, you know, wasn't super great about doing all the things he needed to do to take care of himself. And, you know, he was rollerblading and, you know, and he was doing all sorts of stuff that like any kid would want to do. Mm-hmm. And not, I don't know what the connection of those two. I don't know if he had, you know, locked himself in a bubble and just hooked himself up into an IV bag 23 hours a day. Like, I don't know if that meant he would have lived longer or if this is just the way it would have panned out. But,
which particular reason is rollerblading? Was he on blood thinners or was he not supposed to stress?
Oh,
his
I just
heart?
Mean that, like, you know, I don't know. That's the thing is, like, I was young at the time too, and you know, and there were other factors, but it just he was living. He wasn't taking medicines when he was supposed to be taking them. Mm. He would skip biopsy appointments, things like that, you know, and because I think he felt like he was fine at that point, you know, and I, again, there may be zero correlation between those things. They may be unrelated.
But, no, I mean, you never, you
well,
know.
I just know that like at a certain point when he was getting sick again, there was talk of him getting a second transplant and the doctors basically said no. Because you haven't done X, Y, and Z, and you need to triage. It's like we got to focus on people who are going to do it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Which, so I don't know whether, you know, and who knows? And
well, that's part
he went back and forth whether he even wanted a second heart. Like at a certain point, he would be like, no, I'm just going to ride this out, you know? And that was kind of the tough part about it, just the long grind of it, you know?
Yeah.
And,
but a teenager, I mean, I'm sure those are choices, you know, how could you not make those kinds of choices when you're a teenager?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like it all makes sense.
Yeah.
But that was interesting. So the first 8 years, what was it like with your did your parents not get along well, or what was going on in your household?
Well, you know, and, my mother was severely mentally ill. She had a borderline personality disorder, which, you know, we didn't really know that at the time or didn't know what that meant or what it was.
Did she eventually get diagnosed?
She did a long time later, but she never really accepted it. she was a bit of a handful.
Like,
you know, she's my mother, you know, you don't want to speak ill or whatever, but we were estranged for like 15 years, like where I would, you know, I'd speak to her a couple times a year, but we didn't get along particularly well, which made it really difficult because she and my younger brother were attached to the hip. So it was hard trying to, and she was from Georgia. And so they had moved back down to Georgia. And so, you know, trying to maintain a relationship with him without her, it was dicey. But so that's why a lot of the stuff I only heard really through him, my younger brother, and my dad. You know, I never really got to speak to doctors about this or anything. So a lot of it is kind of, I'm piecing this together based on what I was told by what they call, you know, unreliable narrators. So my mother was the kind of person who sued a lot of people and was sued by a lot of people.
Oh, wow. Litigious.
Like, drama. Like I used to say, like my mom was Trump without money. She was a bit of a town character in the sense that, you know, like there were whispers about her a lot.
Well, she sounds mentally disturbed, but not mentally disturbed in a way that is manageable or
it was passive. It was not always benign, you know. It was so that, you know, was not super easy at times, you know, to deal with. But
so did she did she like yell? Was she aggressive?
Well,
did she make sense?
At times, she was a real fabulist. You know, she again, kind of like Trump, where she would say things that just weren't accurate, but she believed them, or she wanted you to believe them, or who knew, you know, who knows, you know. And she was incredibly devoted to my younger brother, but that was a kind of a weird, it was a weird relationship. Like, he slept in the same bed with her until he was like 11 or something. It was really not
That's making
healthy.
Me sad.
Yeah, it was
that's
a little Munchausen by proxy,
that's,
kind of stuff.
And, that's yeah. really like, yeah.
And so, I mean, it wasn't Munchausen by proxy because he genuinely was sick, but it was not a super healthy relationship.
She identified somehow or connected to his physical illness with her mental
illness.
Well,
it made her feel very useful and very needed and very, you know, and again, I don't want to belittle that because it's like, you know, he would be in the hospital, she would sleep in a recliner in his hospital room with him for like months at a time.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, and I don't want to dismiss that as being all bad because it's clearly
not at all, but it wasn't like, it's kind of a perfect storm, sadly, I think,
yeah.
of like somebody who like wasn't well-adjusted dealing with a situation that the most well-adjusted person would stumble.
Yeah. And like, I always felt bad for my younger brother just because he never really learned how to just be in a group of people because he was always under a microscope, either literal or metaphorical.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he would be, you know, on the upswing and he'd be back in school, he'd be, you know, months or years behind his classmates
because
my mother wasn't doing any of that stuff, any of that homeschooling, tutoring type stuff.
Right.
And he also he wasn't used to not being the focus. You know what I mean? And so those kids, it's like any attention is better than, you know, bad attention is better than no attention. And so there's a lot of just behavioral stuff that, you know.
He didn't get socialized properly.
No, not at all.
Did he go to school at all when he was, you know, like 5 or under?
For periods of time. Like, he, you know, there were probably a 2 or 3 years at least where he had uninterrupted school years. Maybe he would have to, you know, take a few days off here or there for some medical procedure, but it was never consistent. Like, it was never where you really kind of have a 5-year chunk where you're with the same kids in school, where you're maintaining these friendships for long periods of time.
Consistency,
you know? Yeah.
So were your parents split up then?
They split up when I was in I guess would have been junior high. Finally, but it was like my dad, you know, Catholic kind of thing of like, you don't get divorced, you know. They should have, I mean, quite frankly, they should have gotten divorced the day after they got married, but they just weren't.
Do you think they were a bad match, or is your father, I don't know, is your father do you think he's difficult? Your mother sounds easily difficult to get along with. That's true.
Yeah.
Is your father also difficult in some ways?
Sure. Everybody is. I mean, and I don't want, you know, and obviously everybody has their
mishigas.
Yes. Everybody has everybody has their positive parts, and I don't want
to. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't want us to sound like we're being critical.
Oh, yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, I think that, you know, I think like what I want people to understand is what I want them to look at you and understand what survival and flourishing and thriving looks like, because a lot of people have, he's making fun of me now, but it's true. He's like, you know, because we all have, you know, I remember Christian saying something like, you know, his wife actually wrote a book on how difficult, I mean, her father tried to...
Yeah, her life makes my life look like a walk through the daisies.
Yeah, but that involves murder in jail, or attempted murder in jail. And so Christian's just a little bit, you know, not right there. But, I mean, I think that Christian and Cambry both are... I mean, we know, we people know how difficult, like, a lot of childhood can be, and the traumas of growing up and things that happen. And I just don't, everybody's always doing the best they can. I don't, So this is not a criticism. This is about thriving.
It's like if you put certain chemicals together, they react in a way that's harmonious or disharmonious.
Yeah.
And that's not a slam on either of the chemicals.
No,
it's just some
no.
chemicals react differently when placed with other chemicals. You
right.
know?
This is about thriving. So anyway, so your father.
My dad is still living, and he
And is your mom passed then?
Yeah, she passed away like 5 years ago.
Mm.
My dad, he's Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I say that lowercase C as well as uppercase C. You know, he did grow up, Boston Irish Catholic, went to, parochial school and the whole deal. But he's also very Catholic in the sense of just he refers to himself as sort of a concrete sequential, which is just like he's almost like a dog where it's like he has his things that he has to do every day. Like he has a program, at 4:15, I do this, at 4:30, I do this. But I think he was the kind of guy, his mother, who was older. I only knew her as a child, but I get the feeling that she was a bit of a handful emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so I think he gravitated towards, and as do I. I mean, my wife is a handful too, in a good way. Mm-hmm. My wife is 10 pounds of emotion in a 5 pound bag. And I need that in my life. Like, I think mm-hmm. some people, they need a light to fly around. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like they need a sun, and I, and sometimes that can be positive and sometimes it can be negative. I'm lucky in that it's very positive for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I would be very gray without her.
Cambry is a force of nature. I mean, she's like one of the most motivated and big thing, like her, she's run for office.
She's big. She's
real leadership quality.
Yes. And she's just a big personality, and I need that in my life. We're all kind of trying to reproduce. We're all trying to solve old relationships.
I agree. Although I wouldn't call you a shrink. I think you both can hold your own in the personality area, frankly.
Well, but yeah, and her parents were deaf and needed help with everything. And I think that's why she gravitates towards me, because I'm hopeless and incapable of living an adult life.
Self-deprecate. More.
It's true, though.
I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it, folks. Your dad, do you remember, did your mom and dad seem to always have a contentious relationship?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where, I just kind of assumed that's what
normal was.
Absolutely.
So was yelling and?
Yeah. And my dad would lose his temper very, get exasperated very much. And, and at the time he was drinking and things like that. And it was one of those things where I didn't know my dad at all until my parents got divorced. Uh-huh. Like I just thought of him as this just angry, clenched teeth, just miserable person, uh-huh. really, who would have moments of being really fun and whatnot, but was just kind of a fundamentally unhappy dude. Uh-huh. And then when my parents split up, after that initial sort of culture shock of a few months of like, oh, now I'm divorced and I'm living in some crappy apartment or whatever, it's like his entire world just blossomed. Like he owned a company and his company got more successful and he got happier and just he developed sort of tastes for arts and things like that that he wasn't.
Wow.
And so it's just, you never know how people are going to. And I felt like, who's this guy? I didn't know this dude at all when I was 8 years old. But now at 15, he's like my lifesaver.
Did that seem really inspiring to you?
I mean, I've said it before, like my dad, like, saved my life in all the ways that matter. I mean, not literally, but I was really kind of falling through the cracks. Again, this happens a lot with families that have a sick kid, is that the kids who aren't sick, the parents quite naturally a lot of times they tend to be like, well, you're fine. We need to deal with this. And so people don't really notice that you're kind of losing it a little bit. Like I never did drugs or drank or anything like that. I was very weird in that sense. Like I never had a drink until I was almost 21.
Wow.
But I had major insomnia, and I wouldn't sleep for like days at a time, and wow. And I would fall asleep in all my classes. I had two separate teachers pull me out of class and accuse me of being on drugs. And I remember one of them was like, you know, those hippie English teacher who probably had gone to Woodstock, and you know, and he pulled me out of class one day. He's like, "What do you want, man? Come on, lay it on me. Tell me what you're doing, man." I was like, "Stop this, stop it." But my dad at the time, he had kind of encountered, he had a really great 10 years or so, like financially, like his, and I am so fucking lucky that those 10 years happened to coincide with my high school and college, you know, that it was, because, you know, we grew up, you know, in a nice, pretty nice suburb in Massachusetts and whatnot, but we were never the family that like went on like expensive vacations or, you know, my mom had a station wagon and all that. But then, this 10 year period, like he was really doing well. Like
after they separate. Or
yeah.
Got divorced.
And I don't know if I don't know causation, you know, correlation doesn't equal causation, blah, blah, blah. Well,
he's an inspiration hearing about him.
He is.
Too.
He's a really great dude. And, you know, and then, you know, later in life, he kind of got humbled financially again. And, you know, now he's, you know, living in a one bedroom apartment in Lowell, but he's doing fine and all that. But I was very fortunate in the sense that he had this real, financial windfall for a while. And he saw that I was kind of losing it a little bit, or just not, you know, underachieving and just not really
engaged,
thriving. And, you know, I had been in the school plays and stuff like that, but I wasn't really showing a lot of, you know, enthusiasm for anything. And he was the one who sort of encouraged me. I had a couple of friends who had gone to this performing arts school, and he's the one who kind of encouraged me and said, like, "We need to get you out of this situation." And, you know, and so my going to the school wasn't just so much that I was a theater kid and wanted to be doing writing and doing all that sort of stuff. It was also to get me out of the house, getting me out of living with my mom.
That's really like beautiful that he, that he figured that out for you.
Yeah, no, it was really super.
And also, you know, like no small thing. Your dad like built his own business. What business was it?
The exciting world of tax appraisal.
Doesn't matter. He could do it. He was good at it. That's a lot of initiative. Like after what he'd been through, he's a great example.
Yeah. I mean, he had had the company when I was a kid, but it was like a really small, you know, skeleton crew type organization. And then at a certain point, it got really successful, you know, and that's when things were much better. But
so he had a lot of vision there to get you out of the house.
So
how was it when you finally got to boarding school?
It was the best 2 years of my life, which was weird because that was like that year was the year my younger brother had his transplant and all that. And there was a lot of drama going on, and I had a lot of drama, you know, suicidal girlfriends and that whole deal. You know, typical.
You had your drama in your own life. Did you have a suicidal girlfriend?
Oh my God.
Did she really?
She tried. She was a cutter. And,
cutting. I like cutting. I used to like cutting. Did she wind up in a hospital?
She did. Yeah.
That's bad.
I mean, it was a performing arts high school, so there was a lot of drama.
There's drama.
Yeah,
teenagers and drama.
Exactly.
So you were, but do you think like if you hadn't, that sounds like that must have been the most life transforming experience for you? Like,
I think this is true of most people, that those years in high school, whether they're happy, sad, whatever, you have more emotion in those 4 years than you have the rest of your life. You know what I mean? Like there's, cause you're coming of age, you're experiencing sex stuff for the first time. And, you know, and so obviously you always think about like when you were 17. I mean, that's why there's so many fucking movies and TV shows about it. But those 2 years were just incredibly special to me. And you know, I still have daydreams about them, you know, you know, wishing certain things had gone a different way or reliving certain moments or whatever. But it's a really special place. I love that school. And I was giving them money for a while. I can't now, mm-hmm. but I was for a time.
That's so. Are you still friends with anybody from there?
I am. I right now, just online at this point, like just a couple of people interact
with
online
stuff.
You're in
touch with people.
But for a long time, I had a bunch of very good friends, more so than college. Hmm. You know, like I don't really see anybody that I went to college with, mm-hmm. even though a lot of them still live in New York. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this particular, it was 165 people. It was a really mm-hmm. tiny school.
You know, I was thinking about like when you have some, I'm going to say tragedy or something particularly difficult going on at home. It's really in like when you're growing up, like everybody knows all about your family. Like that's one thing that I noticed when I got away from college. I no longer had the burden of like my crazy parents that people didn't want to come over to our house.
Oh God. I know that feeling. Yeah. I've always had this sort of theory, but something I've noticed that there are kids who have kids over their house and there are kids who go over to other kids' houses.
Yeah.
And I was always the kid who went to over the kids' houses. I would never have people come in and have to deal with my mother. Like never in a million years.
Did your mom work?
She had many jobs, all of which she got unceremoniously shit-canned
and then
from.
Sued.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot. Like there were so many places in town that we couldn't go in because there was just drama for something, you know. Aww. Like there was like not one video store in town that we were welcome in, you know. Like
I want to hear about your older brother. Like what happened with him and what was your relationship with him like? Like how did he factor into all this?
It's funny. He passed away as well at 37. He had just a major heart attack. And so, and my mother died of a heart thing. She died on having heart surgery on the operating table.
Was it a shock? Was it a surprise?
Completely the opposite of my younger brother. Whereas like my younger brother was like a long, slow goodbye. Whereas with John, it was just like one day he's there, the next day he's gone, you know.
Like you just got a call or
yeah, something. I got a call from my ex-brother-in-law, you know, and
just shocking.
Yeah. And honestly, that's the one that I struggle with my relationships with both of my brothers, but for different reasons. But you know, John, having you know that we grew up together,
shared the same experience, same experiences, intense.
Went to the same school at the same time, you know, stuff like that, you know. And you know, certainly there's a lot that I wish had gone differently between the two of us because we were not estranged by any means. We were typical brothers, I guess. But I always got the feeling that he wanted maybe a closer relationship and I kind of kept things at sort of an arm's length.
Well, you guys were probably like, were you different? Like what did you, you know, like, did you not enjoy his company that much or?
He was very much, and I say this now because I don't think this word is an insult anymore. He was a big nerd. You know, like he was, you know, we used to have, you know, he used to have Dungeons and Dragons in the basement. He would bring people over, which I always, but they would have Dungeons and Dragons every Friday night in the basement. Ah. And then later as he was an adult, he was like heavily, heavily involved in the LARPing community.
Live over my head. Playing. What is LARP?
LARPing. Live action role playing. Which is where it's kind of like Civil War reenactment, except medieval, you know, where they would rent out like a Boy Scout camp and they would have like, you know, armor and swords. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was like kind of the Mick Jagger of that world. He was a big deal in this community.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm like thinking there must be you know, you're a performer. He's a performer. Was there any that's a performance? He's a performer.
In a way, yeah.
He's
a
performer.
It was a little awkward, like when we would be doing the plays in like high school, junior high and high school, I tended to be a little more successful in that mm-hmm. realm than he was.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, awkward at times.
Yeah, being younger.
Yeah. But then he kind of found his own thing. Like he was never really invested in it the way I was. Like he kind of.
Well, it's you know. it's when I say performance, it's like really performance. His performance, it's an adjacent to like you're a professional performer. He's adjacent. He's not.
He was a computer geek who liked swords.
Yeah, but you must have had some kind of drama in your background. I mean, it's interesting that you both wound up with some sort of like wanting to dramatize things.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I always felt a little bad because, you know, when we were, his relationship with my mother was probably somewhere between mine and my younger brother's, where he really was kind of stuck holding the bag when I kind of hit the road.
You mean when you moved out?
When I moved out for high school, and then once I went to college, like I really dissociated myself from that world.
Right.
And he was a little bit kind of left to pick up that. And so I felt a little, you know, a certain amount of guilt about that. But he kind of loved it too. He was one of those dudes who kind of thrived on drama a little bit, you know, and at one point he met his wife through LARPing. Like she was also a LARPer and she's a lovely woman. Yeah.
That sounds like a great sex underground community.
It may, you know, I'm sure there is. It's a lot of body wenches and whatnot. Flagons of mead, what have you. But at one point, like, he let my mother move in with them, and she almost destroyed their marriage within like 6 months.
Why would he do that?
Because, you know, this misguided sense, or not even misguided, but just a sense of, she's my mother, and this is what you do when your mother, you know. It was after my younger brother had passed away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think just out of a sense of obligation, you know.
Do you think because he's like the older, like when your parents got divorced, do you think that he felt like he needed to take over, or?
I don't know. I just think he acted a little bit like an abused spouse with like, oh, uh-huh. No, she's actually getting better now. Like, oh, she's, you know, things are definitely better. And then I would always be like, they're not better. There's no chance it's better.
Right. Right.
And he would kind of just tell himself these things.
But you had a bigger vision of what life could be than he did. Obviously. I think that's really what it is.
That's a positive way of putting it.
It bothers. So I'm just going to say this as the fake shrink, like it's bothering me. Like I'm feeling like maybe compassion, I hope is a good way to put it. Like that you're feeling some guilt about, is this too much? I can't believe I'm talking like this. What the fuck? So I'm just saying that, like, I think he just naturally kind of gravitated to that, and it's probably,
yeah, I think people play out their wiring.
Yeah, and it's hard to see that, but I don't think that.
And there was never, for me, there was never like a decision.
I don't think you have any like responsibility for that.
You know, you play out your programming, you know.
Yeah, I don't think, like, you have any responsibility.
Whatever my lizard brain was telling me at the time is that I can't be around this. And I mean, John was just different in that sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like you escaped, and I guess there's it's like natural survival.
A little bit, like guilt. I used to, a movie that I love that really kind of hit me hard at the time. Have you ever seen What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Not that I'll remember. Oh, yeah. I mean, I know it's a famous movie.
It's great. The mother in that movie is kind of the town laughingstock. She's like, you know, 600 pounds.
Yeah.
And my mother was also large, not quite to that degree, but she was a larger woman. But she was more kind of laughingstock is too strong a word, but she was, she was a live wire.
Yeah,
and people
yeah.
kind of knew
people
to avoid
knew
her
she
a
was.
Little bit, you know?
Right.
And then young Leonardo DiCaprio plays the youngest of the family, and he's mentally disabled and is also then a bit of a handful. And although my younger brother wasn't mentally disabled, he was certainly had issues and whatnot. And then Johnny Depp plays the older son, who's kind of the one stuck taking care of everybody. And I always felt like, oh shit, that's John. And I'm like the brother who like took off. Like that's always the sort of self-flagellation that I would do about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a decision I ever made consciously. It was just something I
felt like I had to do. I think that, you know, I think that if you had stayed, or like if you'd wound up in a position where you might have gotten really, really, really depressed, or something would not have gone well, and then that just would have just piled on to what your family was.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I was lucky. I don't know why I had a very I did have sort of a defiant nature. Like I, you know, I was one of those really annoying teenage atheists. I mean, I still am an atheist, but I'm not annoying the way I was when I was 15. You know, I used to be one of those, let me tell you why you're wrong. Like one of those, one of those types. And all, and I've kind of had the same attitude towards drugs and alcohol, like that, you know, like, I don't need that to have a good time. Like one of those idiots. And now it's like, oh no, I definitely needed it. But I feel like with the way my, if I had found drugs or alcohol in that, with that family situation, it could have gone in a bad way.
Yeah. Or just,
I knowing what I know about myself now, like addictive tendencies and things like that. Like I know. It would have been ideal.
But also, like, even if you were just, say, plain old depressed and withdrawn, that would have been another problem. I think your father, you know, and, you know, like, you, he must have seen that you were getting, that you weren't getting a chance. And, you needed a chance, and thank God that happened.
Yeah, it's a, there are certain points in your life where it's like, you need a champion on some level. You just need somebody to see something in you that you don't see yourself.
Thank God. But I wanted to hear about what it was like when your brother was born. Like, what was your relationship when your younger brother was born? What was your relationship with your older brother like then? And how did you guys respond and go through that experience of your younger brother being born? Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's so hard at this point, you know. And also, one of the things that I've kind of realized, you know, years of therapy and whatnot, is that, like, I don't have a lot of memories from my childhood, at least when it comes to being home. And, you know, I think that a lot of that was just disassociation and whatnot. Like,
yeah.
Glimpses, and it's almost like putting your nose up to a thing of smelling salts, which is like, nope, don't want to think about that. You know,
So
it's like I have a ton of memories. I can tell you everything about every single elementary school teacher I ever had.
Wow.
But I can't tell you really much about what it was like being in my house, because it's just like too weird.
So you really just disassociate.
I think, yeah, on some level.
That makes sense. That's healthy, probably.
But yeah, I mean, you know, my memories of my younger brother being born are mostly just sitting in Boston Children's Hospital, like, all the time, like sitting in the lobby.
Did you and your older brother, like, did you talk about it? Did you go through that together? Or you just don't even remember?
You're 8 years old. You don't heart to hearts at that point. You know what I mean? You're just kind of skating along through your life.
You're just doing whatever.
I think my dad and my mom, you know, took pains to try to let us live normally.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in a way, it was kind of like school, like trying to let us kind of fend for ourselves, which allowed them to have more time to deal with my younger brother. So, I mean, you can put it positive or negative. The positive side being that they didn't, like, stop us from having a normal childhood. The negative being, like, they kind of just like, you're fine and just go do your own thing. You know, and I think there's a lot of kids who grew up, you know, my age and older, whatnot. It's like there wasn't the kind of degree of parental supervision.
But they're so lucky that you knew not to, like, take drugs and all that.
I still don't know how that happened. I really don't, because I was in the metal and at least in my younger years, and I certainly had friends that did all that stuff, but I took some weird pride in not doing that. And now I feel like, God, I missed out on so much.
No. Wow. That is pretty remarkable. That is pretty remarkable.
I don't understand it. I really don't understand it.
You have some well of resilience in there.
But it was more like a contrarianism. You know, I think that it was like I saw the way kids in my high school acted when they were drunk, and I disliked it. And my dad had been, you know, my dad is an alcoholic, but you know, hasn't had a drink in 30 whatever years. Right. But when he quit drinking, I think part of it is I thought of alcohol as depressing, because it was very depressing with my dad. My dad, you know, I would wake up in the morning and I'd go in the bathroom and there'd be like 12 empty tall boys just in the bathroom.
That's heartbreaking.
Because he would just go in there. He would literally go in there, and he told me he would walk in there and he would just drink and pace just for hours every night, just like as a way to get away from my mother or whatever. He would just shut the door, you know, which is a very suburban dad sort of quiet desperation
heartbreaking. You know, we forget people didn't have a whole lot of options in those days.
There was no online community to be a part of.
And also, like, you got married. You didn't, you know, like, I mean, like, I'm really glad that I wasn't forced into, like, being a housewife and all that shit. Like, you know, that's what people had to do in those days, right?
Yeah, and it just wasn't something that was questioned. It was just
That's how you
do
live.
A, you do B, you do C, you do D, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did your brother remain religious? Were your parents both like Catholic?
My mother, you know, became involved with the Catholic Church. She'd grown up Baptist, but then when she got married, got involved with the Catholic Church and actually fell in love with a deacon in my church, which is a super weird thing.
Wow, that's interesting.
Married to my dad. And it was a very awkward thing. It was a bit.
Hang out?
He didn't feel that way towards her.
Did she bug him or?
Yeah, she would like show up at his house at night and stuff. It was
that's drama.
Yeah,
there's drama in there.
But yeah, I mean, but my uncle was a priest, and so like we would have like mass in my grandmother's living room, and you know, but very kind
weird
of
shit.
You know, that generation that had the framed pictures of John F. Kennedy on the wall. You know, like that Irish Boston Catholic. You know.
And so was your brother religious as well? Did he fit
into that? He went to St. Anselm College, which is a Catholic school.
Oh, okay.
But he wasn't like super into it. I think he liked the culture of being religious more than
You know. Right. But that's clearly what kind of separated you out as right?
Yeah. I've always had this weird thing where I just like, if everybody's doing one thing, I feel compelled to do the opposite, I wouldn't say it's a positive or negative. It's just, you know, just a weird contrarianism thing.
Well, I just, you know, we got to go. It's this went so fast, but I just want to say, you know, thanks so much for sharing. And I hope, you know, I hope we didn't re-traumatize. But also, you know, thanks for going through all that and being the comedian you are and sharing that with us, the creativity that I think you've gotten from that and all the growth and everything you've gotten out of it. You share with your 50,000 Twitter followers and us. So thank you for doing that.
Well, I appreciate that.
And let's tell everybody again about Waggy Tales.
Oh yeah, Waggy Tales tonight. Chelsea Music Hall, 9 o'clock, I believe.
8:30
doors. Yeah.
It's 8:30. Great lineup. I'm looking for the address. It's 407 West 15th Street. If you go to Waggy Tail Rescue, you can buy tickets. You can also find tickets on my Facebook page. And I want to remind you, check out newmusicforolds.
Substack.com.
Substack.com. Let's give QED a shout out.
Yeah.
That's
QED Astoria.
QED Astoria, which has, are you guys doing comedy?
Yes, comedy, storytelling, drink and draws, meetups, all sorts of stuff. QEDAstoria.com. That's in Astoria, Queens. That's my wife's performance venue that she
has. And thank you so much for tuning into Radio Free Brooklyn and listening to Dr. Lisa. Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit is here every Thursday, 2 to 3. But if you go to the archives, I have over 300 episodes, and you can hear the previous episode that I did with Christian and hear about his special, which is amazing. And then you can go.